Today's peanut gallery is brought to you by Sugar Egg Full of Bunnies. Sugar Egg Full of Bunnies. Go in. Look at it. Look into it. Stare into it. And dance. Dance! Dance! Dance!
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here. This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Josh A. Kagan.
And we are on...
Live!
Live! And if it sounds like there are other people in this room, it is because we are on the Joko Cruise.
Yay!
The seventh of its kind. This is actually not the first Peanuts Gallery we have recorded on the Joko Cruise, but the other one was in like a podcast speakeasy we ran out of my stateroom
yes.
a couple of years ago.
You, me, Nicole, Licker, and us watching the episode in like triple time?
Yes. Which is really the best way.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Because then it looks more strip-like. It's just frame, 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 frame.
Yes, and it's very Ramones-like in speed. It's just.
And apart from a live audience, we are also joined by an extra special guest.
This is very exciting.
Very exciting. He is a podcaster in the Max Fun family, home of fine products such as We Got This with Mark and Hal, Surprisingly Nice, and Tights and Fights. He's an improviser who can be heard wherever fine improv products are sold. His voice can currently be heard on The Venture Brothers. You may know him as Philip Fathom from The Thrilling Adventure Hour, but we know him as Hal Lublin.
Hooray!
Hi!
Welcome!
Oh, thanks, everybody. And thanks to you two for having me on, because I've been haranguing you. Did I harangue you?
Or? You did, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of. You and Ken Plum are actually competing for very similar episodes, so.
Yeah. And he got it.
You got your hand on top of the baseball bat.
No. That I wanted, but I'm glad I got it. Because I'm
good.
Ready to talk about this.
The episode we are talking about today is, it's the Easter Beagle, Charlie Brown, exclamation point. It is the 12th primetime animated TV special, based on Peanuts by Charles M. Schulz, and it debuted in 1974 on April 9th, and it is booby hatch jive, in this reporter's opinion.
I would classify it as groovy. Is that controversial
it
to say?
It is. So the music is super groovy.
Super groovy.
And certainly...
some groovy aesthetics just going
on.
Oh,
the aesthetics are fresh to death, and we will get to that. let us synopsize. Here is the synopsis of today's episode, in my opinion. Synopsis. Children ride escalators... and a girl doesn't know how eggs work. Also, a bird has a swinging bachelor pad. Synopsis.
And to supplement that, I'm going to begin a segment that I'm deciding to call What Is Your Fucking Problem, Charlie Brown?
Which is now the title of this podcast from here on.
So we'll just go through the arcs of the individual characters and you'll kind of get a picture of the whole thing. So Peppermint Patty is teaching Marcy how eggs do, and Marcy has seemingly never seen an egg before in
her
life.
She can't work eggs.
Nor an American kitchen. Sally cannot celebrate Easter without the right shoes. Woodstock is looking to stop renting a nest and own his own birdhouse, and Snoopy puts on a down payment. Lucy's planning to rig the town Easter egg hunt. Snoopy is transported to the bunny dimension and performs the forbidden ancient rite that makes him become Easter Beagle distributor of eggs. And Linus, as always, is a pedantic buzzkill.
Linus is more than a... he is like some dude from The Leftovers in this episode. He's literally just wandering around the town in clothes that I have to assume smell very bad, and just like, you're all living a lie! Easter is a
the
waste
Easter
of time.
Beagle is nice!
Yeah, it's coming!
Hold on. Can we go back up to the top of your arcs? I want to talk about Marcy and Peppermint Patty.
Oh.
I've always assumed, as a lifelong Peanuts fan, that they were in some sort of assisted living situation where Marcy was Patty's court-appointed supervisor. And was like, because the whole thing is Peppermint Patty's real dumb, can't tell the difference between dogs and children.
For example.
Yep, that's just one part of whatever she's got. And Marcy, it was like the one who is actually capable. But this one really flips the script in that she, not only does she not know, as he pointed out, how eggs work or how they're made, like she's never heard of, look, I grew up Jewish. I knew you hard boiled eggs before you dip them and die. Like I understood that. That was just, you got the pause or whatever.
I do think that it goes both ways though, because the, Marcy repeatedly fucking up eggs, arc, there's a scene where, cause first she, what does she do? She fries them
she
and that doesn't
them.
Work.
Yeah.
And then she, puts them in the oven.
Waffle iron.
Waffle iron.
Toaster. Yes. It's like a Saw movie. She hates those eggs.
Just like every possible way you could mutilate an egg in a way that is now inedible. It was very bizarre.
Yeah.
But in the sequence with the oven, I want to point out, she puts the eggs on a tray, sticks them in the oven, and then turns the oven on. And then Peppermint Patty goes, ah! And they have to go to the store to buy new eggs. Like, you could just turn the oven off and be like, no,
those
Marcy,
eggs are
you
fine.
Dipshit. Like, so I think that neither of them really know how eggs do. Because I feel like at some point, Peppermint Patty should have just been like, you know what? I'll do the eggs. You just mix the dyes, okay, honey? Like,
sure.
But,
and then Marcy would just end up like drinking it and being like, yeah. Oh, I have superpowers now or something. She's real dumb in this. That is a thing that drives me crazy about these specials, is that characters do not stay on brand from episode to episode. Like, in some episodes, Linus is genius level. And then in episodes like this, he's just running around like Alex Jonesing this shit.
Yeah.
He's like, the Easter Beagle put fluoride in the drinking water. And he's a crazy man. And in the last couple of episodes, that preceded this, Marcy has been sort of a voice of reason, even though she is still very bad with pronouns. She is not respecting Peppermint Patty's pronouns. Is this one of the specials you watched growing up?
I have never seen this one before, probably because it was like a doubleheader with a special for which I bought like a VHS set and just went, well, I don't have to watch that one. I know, like, when you get the Charlie Brown the Christmas special, and then they package the Thanksgiving one with it.
Sure.
You watch the Thanksgiving one as a lark. You don't put aside time for it. I mean, I don't.
It's not in your bujo.
No.
It's not.
No, it's not.
It's one of the ones that you just visit because it's on TV. Like, oh, ABC is running. It's Labor Day, Charlie Brown. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I've been paralyzed temporarily and I can't change it. Or to put on once something I want, like, even what I bought once. Your Good Man Charlie Brown, which you have not done
the musical?
Yet. It is the animated
special version of the musical.
Which is, I mean, just the hottest garbage on the planet, because the musical's great.
Yep.
And the animation specials are great.
We will have to have you back, because I want to hear your takes on the supper time sequence in particular.
I never want to hear Snoopy speak with a human voice. It's Bill Melendez doing it.
Can everybody give us their best Snoopy Bill Melendez? Wah. Wah. Fantastic.
See?
That's my text tone from now on.
Yeah. It's weird to see Snoopy like, oh, I've got to get up on this doghouse.
Like, I don't like that.
He's not Snagglepuss.
Where's Charlie Brown?
Oh, exit, doghouse left.
Yeah.
So you'd never seen this before. Hal, any patented Hal Lublin hot takes on this episode?
I mean, I would say it was like a 70s baseline vomited everywhere. Aww. Which I like.
In the best possible way. Yeah, vomited in the best possible way.
Look, that's not a bad thing.
Sometimes we are from Los Angeles. Exactly. We're into that sort of thing.
That's how you make fighting weight.
Yeah, no, perhaps because I was raised Catholic, this was one we watched actually quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I really have an affection for some of the, like, the music that they play, which I'll drop right there, when the Easter Beagle comes in, like, makes me feel genuinely emotional, like, in the way that the Main Street Electrical Parade theme does. It's like this potent force, and... And it doesn't make no sense. And it's non-denominational as Easter specials go. They never, considering that Linus literally quotes from the Bible in the Christmas special.
He knows how the Bible works. He's memorized it like one of those guys on the Fahrenheit 451 island.
Yeah.
He knows the
He's
Bible.
He's got like Easter Beagle tracks though in this one, basically. Yeah.
He should be rolling away a paper mache rock saying he's risen.
A giant egg.
Yeah.
A giant egg with a beagle inside a cave. Like, what up?
So this actually dovetails nicely into my working thesis for this episode. And you mentioned, Molly, you grew up a Catholic, as my grandfather would say. I don't know why I use that pronunciation. But it is super non-denominational to the point where, in my opinion, it's almost nonsensical. And that's kind of, we were not raised a religious family. I asked my mother, who's here today, Mom, why don't we go to church? And she said, oh, it's just a person talking for an hour and a half. Do you want me to talk to you for an hour and a half? And I went, no, absolutely. This is already too long.
That's a very Lucy Van Pelt kind of answer. I really appreciate that.
A very Van Pelt childhood. But Easter, once you strip it of the thing that it's actually about, it is this weird kind of nonsense holiday where there's It feels as far removed from the original text as a holiday could possibly be.
And we've talked on this podcast before about how a lot of the Peanuts holiday specials are not about the holiday itself. They're about the performative obligations you feel surrounding that holiday. Like Charlie Brown, he's like, I got to feel this way because it's Christmas, but I'm a bummer because I'm Charlie Brown. And like, you know, the Halloween one's like, I got to wear a costume. I got to go trick or treating, but all I get is rocks, you know? And there's sort of this like, well, it's Easter. So what? And like Lucy lays it out in a speech to Schroeder at the top. Like,
we've got another one of those great holidays coming up where boys have the opportunity to give presents to pretty girls.
Because they were like, let's trot out the hits from the other specials, yeah. I guess.
And Schroeder is the only one who... There is no moment in this special where it's like, here's what Easter is actually about, Charlie Brown. Although I think that would be amazing if Linus told the story and the eyes just get wider and wider. Like, well, how the fuck did we get to eggs?
It's not a time for getting. It's a time of renewal, the start of spring.
Like I said, I was not raised religiously at all, so I only knew Easter as like eggs and candy and whatnot. How, as a young Jewish man growing up,
yes,
what was your interpretation of Easter, and did that jibe when you watched this special?
I mean, yeah, to me, that is the special sort of portrayed Easter exactly as I know it, which is go get a bunch of candy. Because my mother, who's a very sweet woman, she would get me baskets of candy because she didn't want me to feel left out, which was odd because I didn't. It wasn't like I was like, I really need to be Catholic, Mom. Why can't I convert?
And all I want for Hanukkah is to be Catholic.
And here I sit.
My favorite ABC after school special.
They get a Good Friday and an Easter Sunday. That's a weekend of holidays.
I love putting shit on my forehead. Come on.
Did you know there's a whole thing after Mardi Gras that Catholics do? It's amazing.
It felt like a very Jewish holiday because it's about eating as I knew it.
Yes.
Which is what almost all of our holidays are about, either eating or not being allowed to eat.
It's certainly a chocolate-based holiday.
Yes. Yes. This is hollow chocolate rabbits. And now, my wife being Presbyterian, like I would get her, Easter baskets. Is somebody just cheer for Presbyterian?
Yeah!
And do the devil horns? This is fantastic. Are you sure you're Presbyterian?
That seems pretty Presbyterian.
Very reformed.
Are you a Levian Presbyterian? But yeah, it sort of hits the surface notes of the holiday. Just like Christmas is not about Jesus for me. It's about trees and songs and lights and decorations. So the only part of the Christmas special that I never connected hard with was his speech from the Bible, even though it was great to see him. Like, let's remove the commercialism from this, but that's all I have as an outsider.
Yeah.
Is the commercialism. That's what I like about it. It's
a big old pageant.
It feels genuine somehow.
That is now
that
like
weird?
5 months long. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. But Easter, too, just seems like get dressed in pastels.
And this special did actually jive at Christmas pretty substantially, because there's all these arcs that all these characters go through in the What Is Your Fucking Problem segment, aforementioned, leads them to a department store, which was beautifully blandished.
It was gorgeous.
And they walk in, and there's a big old banner on the ceiling that says, only 246 days until Christmas, which is impressive, because it means they have to change that banner out every day.
It's just the number that they flip.
Clunk.
Yeah.
And we brought this up in another episode, but I feel like every year people, you know, go on the social media and complain, it's yelling Christmas stuff already. And it's fascinating.
We wrote a whole musical on the concept.
Wait, that was us?
Yeah.
Neat. But it's interesting to know that they've been doing this for literally fucking ever.
It's Easter, and they already have the Christmas decorations up. Good grief.
That Christmas has been a thing rammed down people's necks since the beginning of time. But again, I think it speaks to the fact we talk about the performative aspect of each holiday. I think in this one, none of the kids quite know what the hell they're doing. Because again, it's almost, people look at Linus like, oh, you weird man running around yelling at people about your Easter beagle. But when you sit down and think about it, it's no more ridiculous than a rabbit, a giant anthropomorphic rabbit. I'm amazed I got that word barely out, by the way.
Yeah, you got the outline of it, yeah.
Well, we'll fix it in post.
I think Peanuts deals a lot with the stresses and problems that adults have, including gaslighting, which is clearly what Snoopy's been doing to Linus for years. He has convinced him that he is the one responsible for Easter. He's
convinced Peppermint Patty that he's a human boy.
We know he's the great
pumpkin. To be fair, there's no convincing on his part. He's just standing there.
He's
She's like,
complicit.
Oh, what's up, dog boy?
Yeah.
That is me. Yes, I am dog boy. Yes.
He's for sure got Linus convinced that the great pumpkin exists. You know that was him. He was like, meh. And then,
you're pitching basically like a Son of Sam scenario, where only Linus can hear Snoopy's thoughts, and he's just, and soon it's going to be like, and also, what about murder, my man?
It's a killing spree, Charlie Brown.
The bodies are stacked like cordwood. What's in the fucking box?
Oh,
Charlie
man,
Brown?
It's a stack of bones from the Christmas special. That's oh my God. We've blown this thing wide open.
Every time I swing my axe, the blade comes off. Every year.
I think it's just more mental abuse. I just think he wants to see how far he can get Linus to go. I mean, are there any other holidays where he's convinced him that he's responsible, like he's the St. Patrick's Day leprechaun, or
he sort of blew the lid off the whole great pumpkin scam that Linus was running.
Yeah,
you know.
But if you use Hal's theory, he set it up too.
Yes, absolutely.
He convinced, using his devil dog powers, that there is such a thing as the great pumpkin, and then took the wind out of his sails.
Well, he's just charming.
He really is.
He's charming in that scary way where you don't know what he's going to try to get, like. After you break contact with him, it's like you come out of a haze. It's like Temple of Doom and somebody took a torch to your side. You're like, whoa, how long have I been out?
Snoopy Ma.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and I think this joke will land because we're on the Joko cruise. At the end of this episode, right? Lucy confronts Snoopy about stealing all of her eggs and taking credit and becoming the Easter Beagle and stuff. And so she goes to his doghouse and was like,
come on, Beagle, put up your duke.
And then he just like kisses her on the cheek once and she's like,
aw. The Easter Beagle.
And so I think he just like cast Charm Person on her. Like that's just a thing he can do.
Absolutely. You know?
He has rustic charm.
Yeah.
Snoopy is, I have often said that Snoopy is one of history's greatest monsters. If you watch, just basing it on the specials, especially He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, especially, which I highly recommend because that's when he absolutely just snaps the tether and just starts attacking children.
You want to talk about Peanut specials that are kind of like Saw movies.
Yeah. But in this episode, there is one of the arcs is Woodstock, the adorable little bird. At the beginning, it's raining. His nest fills with rain, and he's mad at Snoopy about that for some reason.
I also want to point out, we'll add this to Lump Watch at the end, but he's he gets out of his nest and just kind of like walks, you know, maybe 20 feet and then to the sunny part of town where Snoopy lives. Like, what kind of sort of...
It just cleared up. Instantly.
Was that to mark the passage of time, or was the rain that short, is what
it
I'm wondering.
It took 5 years.
You guys, Snoopy controls the weather like Elvis did. Isn't that obvious?
Oh, we haven't talked about Elvis controlling the weather on this podcast.
Oh,
would you mind
well, good.
Up
I'm glad we could segue into that.
Quick recommended reading, Elvis What Happened, which was written by, I think, two members of the Memphis Mafia that he fired in the early to mid-70s. So they wrote an expose on him. Now, who knows how much of this is true, but one of the stories, him forcing them to pull over in like New Mexico because he was conveyed. He's like, hey man, you know, I can change the weather. And he made them pull over and he stood there and concentrated at the sky for like 30 minutes until a cloud moved a little bit. And they had their opening to go, yeah, Elvis, you did it. You moved the weather. He's like, I know, man. I knew it could. And they drove on. We don't know that Snoopy can't actually do that.
No, in fairness, I would read anything written by two members of the Memphis Mafia. They could write a cookbook and I'd read it.
Well, yeah, if it was just one, there'd be no accountability.
Yeah.
They'd have each other.
They corroborate each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
But two, you're like, oh, this is legit. That was not
easy
to
control
the weather.
That's probably a good recipe, yeah.
The question to me was, why is Woodstock mad at Snoopy about the rain? Setting aside that Snoopy controls the weather.
Sure.
Why is he mad? And then this connects later to when Snoopy buys a couple of birdhouses for Woodstock. Snoopy reaches into his skin fur pocket.
He's a marsupial.
Terrifying pouch, his David Cronenberg, like, Videodrome body horror pouch, and pulls out money. Where's the money coming from, Snoopy?
Like, on his person and also economically. Yeah.
Yes, but I figured it out. I think Snoopy is a slumlord. I think Woodstock is paying rent to Snoopy. And that's why at the beginning his nest floods and he's like, Snoopy, you son of a bitch, you gotta be, I'll pay you all this money. And then Snoopy, instead of addressing the issue, picks up Woodstock and uses his own body to dry Woodstock out, which is one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen in my life.
Theirs is an intimate relationship for sure.
It really is.
Do you think that part of Snoopy being a slumlord is he had to evict Spike and that's why Spike has to live in Needles? He's that terrible a slumlord.
He's just an evil hard man, or he's just bad at it.
Spike's like, listen, it's going to be 1 week late. I'm good for it.
Look, this next record's going to be real good.
Yeah. I'm sick, man. I'm sick. I just got to get back up on my feet. That's why they call him Spike, and that's why he's so thin.
And he's like,
he's just
I'm
got
sick
a real
too.
Problem.
I'm sick and not getting the rent. You're out.
Come on, man. I itch all over.
No, your 30 days was up a week ago. That's how nice I am. Now get out. You're going to go live in Needles now. I love that one of the running jokes at Peanuts is just like, is that his house, Snoopy's doghouse, is a TARDIS.
Yep.
It's way bigger on the inside than it appears to be.
Yep, yep.
There are multiple floors. He's got storage. It's really nice. So when Woodstock gets his house, the inside of it is fantastic. It's like top of the line 1974 everything, including a stereo that looks like it was drawn by Dr. Seuss.
It's amazing. For no other reason, watch this episode to see Woodstock's groovy tiny house. Mm-hmm. I would live there right now.
Yeah. Is it on Airbnb? Let's find out. I'm sure it is.
Airbnb. It's like a Larry Flint pill dream. Like, the walls are covered in velvet and this amazing H.R. Giger stereo system and just couches and lamps, and it is beautiful. And then Snoopy, that fucking monster. There's a lot of Snoopy peering into other worlds in this, like a creepy blue velvet vibe.
Yeah, a lot of sliver. Shots of Snoopy's eye just
like
through a
sliver.
Hole. Yes.
And I was just turned on, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's normal.
Thank you. There's the sugar egg. They all go to, we're just going to jump around, right?
Well. Yeah, I mean,
because there's nothing.
We did the extended. Everybody knows the basic canon of the thing. I think we're safe. Yeah.
Can any of you remember? Can either of you or anybody out there remember the exact order that any of these things happen? You can't. I'm going to answer for you.
It's impossible to remember.
It's like just there's, disjointed piece no, after just jointed.
It is like it's on shuffle.
It's four rooms basically.
There's an episode from earlier in this season called There's No Time for Love, Charlie Brown, which begins with like a sequence that is supposed to convey to you like school is boring and hard. But they tell that with just a series of vignettes that are like, I don't exaggerate, like vine length, like tiny. And so they have like a little vignette and then they fade to black and then another vignette, unconnected, fade to black. And they do that like 15 times and it feels like you're just stuck in school with them and passing out repeatedly. And you come to in a different class.
A slow gas leak. That's really stepped up its work.
I would get out of this school, but I'm so tired.
But just in case this episode gets too breakneck paced for you, they were kind enough to put a 45 segment. I guess escalators had just been invented in 1974 because they go to this mall that has like stories up to actual heaven.
Yeah.
And then there is just a scene of like, the kids go up one escalator,
Snoopy goes down one.
But then guess what happens? Then the kids are going down an escalator. And then that's what Easter's about, I guess.
Well, okay. Speaking of that's what Easter's about, what did the Snoopy slumlord sort of timeline have to do with Easter at all?
Well, it's a time of renewal, as Schroeder said. So Woodstock got sweet new digs.
Oh, and his house was destroyed, and then 3 days later it rose again.
Good night.
what? I still don't understand why he was peering in.
Yep.
And got
like
real.
Like a motherfucking creep.
Is he like, my thing is having a nicely decorated home and yours has to look like a tent city?
Yeah,
because
when I was a kid, I thought it was like, what is the most effective way I can destroy this schnoz? Because he puts his nose in the hole of the birdhouse and just rattles it all around.
And he gets stuck. He's trying to remove his head.
And I...
Right?
But he seems to intentionally do that right. in the first okay. place, right?
Sure.
What's that?
He seems to intentionally stick his nose in there in the first place,
yes.
yeah?
For no reason. Maybe Woodstock has like some nice buns in the oven or
maybe
something.
Yeah. What I think, my theory is that he's used to having a TARDIS home, so he just assumes I can stick my head through here and then I will be, I can enter, surely. This is not a finite space, it's an infinite space that a dog could fit in.
Because I'm a shapeshifter, because I'm evil, I'm all knowing, I'm the Prince of Lies.
It's the Prince of Lies, Charlie Brown.
I feel like we'll get to this at the end of the episode. We have an ongoing theory that there was some disaster and all the adults are lumps of meat. I think we could add to that, like, is Snoopy a deathless changeling? And is there anything that that contradicts that?
This is one of my favorite yes-no questions ever. I love that this is a binary. Is Snoopy a deathless changeling? Yes. All right, moving on.
Just to put that on like your OkCupid profile. Like, do you think Snoopy's a changeling? Yes, no, swipe in either direction.
I think I may understand the escalator thing. I was thinking about it now. Yeah. In all of the animated Peanuts specials, none of the kids ever take more than two stairs at a time just to get into their homes. So the idea of not only... Are there more than two steps?
Yeah.
But they're automated?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're riding it all day. That's their space mountain.
Yeah, no, when
that's all they want.
When like, you're an eight-year-old, as they are, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a thrill ride.
And Snoopy's obviously been stealing from Charlie Brown's family, so that's the only form of pleasure that he can afford. Is walking 3 miles.
He's broken the bank on luxury birdhouses.
Yeah. Oh, I think Snoopy has that money because he's had Linus in a Spanish prisoner for 5 years.
Should I close it down?
We've gone off the rails a little
good
bit.
Good night. Yeah, most of the episode I feel like takes place in Discount, which is the name of the store. Yeah. The law is that whenever you go to Discount, you have to spend 3 minutes just standing in front staring up at the sky. Mm-hmm. Like that happened, not because they're reusing cells or anything like that. I would never accuse them of cutting corners. Yeah. But there's twice that Marcy and Peppermint Patty have to go to Discount. And both times they just sort of stand there in a locked loop until somebody comes and tags them out of it. Well, like awakenings.
Those dancing bunny hallucination sequences aren't going to pay for themselves, though. You got to cut corners where you can.
That egg gave Snoopy the St. Vitus's dance. I've never seen anything creepier or more terrifying. So for those of you who haven't watched the episode, Snoopy, everybody's wandering around this giant department store adventures.
He does a meaningless physical gag involving a gumball machine and then lands in front of the Easter egg with a hole in it sort of little diorama stand and goes, oh, well, what about one of these? And then he gets transported into this dimension. There's a little, you know, vignette of these little bunnies kind of standing there. And then he imagines himself in there while these bunnies all dance around him.
Legit breakdancing, I might add.
Legit breakdancing. Yeah.
Like Snoopy is actually breakdancing. But then it cuts back to Snoopy watching his own, like, diseased hallucination of him doing some pagan ritual with rabbits. And the first time he sort of looks out at the audience like, that's right, I'm dancing with bunnies. Pretty cool, huh? And then back into him breakdancing with the bunnies and then back out again. And now he's just got like this squinched up Popeye look on his face. And it's like he's grown.
And just his bottom half is just.
He's grown a dinosaur ass brain that has just, that has just decided to go AWOL. And it's just.
Finally, I'm free.
So he's just got this crunched up face. And then his ass is like going every which way but loose. And I feel like if you were to look at it for more than 30 seconds, you would go mad.
Beautifully blandished.
It is beautifully blandished.
I think that is the rite by which he became the Easter Beagle. Like, that's the induction ceremony.
Yeah.
He was the chosen one. Yeah, anyone orally, else would just look into that egg.
Orally applied ayahuasca that he takes. And then all of a sudden, he's invincible. That's number one.
Sure.
He'll never age. That's number two.
Well, none of these kids ever age.
Yeah. And he will steal from any child to bring Easter to all the other children. Those are the three rules of ayahuasca. Write them down. I want to talk about something else that happens in that store.
Please.
Do you guys remember the time the three of us went to the mall and we went to a department store.
Oh, that was a good time.
And we just kept putting on hats and laughing. Yeah. Like, I can't believe this is on my head. This is a purple one.
I will say this. I love a good hat montage. And
yeah,
this episode
agreed.
Does not disappoint.
You think that's a good hat montage?
They Look, don't even do the, like, switching
well,
the hats.
There's, I mean, it's based on a comic strip, let's remember. So if they did a, like, Snoopy in a hat, Sally in a hat, Snoopy in a hat, Sally in a hat, it would not jibe with the rest of the universe.
Right.
You know, because that's not really, I mean, they were, I will also say, very efficient in trying on hats. It was just like a limp, like cup stacking, you know, like hat. In one shot.
I didn't think the hats were that funny. Maybe I don't. Maybe,
oh, it wasn't but, funny.
I don't know.
I just like hats. No, none of this
and
is funny.
I don't think we can dispute the last hat that Sally ended up with was like this kind of Jackie Onassis thing with Daisy sticking out, and that was an A+ Easter hat.
Yeah.
That was solid. And that's going to go great with her snappy new shoes.
Her snappy new shoes.
This is an important plot point that is set up in the beginning of the episode as a super important plot point, and then we never speak of it again. Mm-hmm. Sally basically turns into like a Tennessee Williams heroine and is like,
look at these shoes. How can I celebrate Easter properly in these shoes?
I guess. And then she goes to the department store, tries on a pair of Ginger Spice shoes, mm-hmm. which I guess that was the first time around. These big like platform sandals.
They're like platform Birkenstocks. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Charlie Brown, who does, by the way, nothing in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that it's the Easter Beagle Charlie Brown, because it's more just like...
It's the Easter Beagle Charlie Brown's friends.
Yeah. It's the Easter Beagle and Charlie Brown, you're just being sad for no reason. Charlie Brown has the goddamn nerve to look at Sally trying on the shoes and say,
aren't those shoes almost out of date, Sally?
That's why they're on sale. Besides, I like to be different anyway.
Go fuck yourself. I am charting my own path. And by the way, Charlie Brown, are you Mr. Blackwell? Who are you, Tim Gunn?
I gotta say, Sally is the sleeper hit of this episode for me. She's got a couple really good zingers. And like, just the, you know, are those out of date? Well, that's why they're on sale. And I like to be different is my fashion aesthetic entirely. That's my whole philosophy.
But she seems like a child of the Depression.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, you have to go. I buy all my Christmas gifts on December 26th because that's when they're on sale. I also dry my paper towels and keep them for later and wash out plastic Ziploc bags.
I also just tangled the front part of my hair into just a giant tangled slinky and I left it like that forever because product isn't cheap. I just use suet.
But Sally also gets, I think, the sickest burn of this whole episode, because Linus is being a drip and going like, my Easter Beagle, you're wasting your time dyeing eggs, which is so time consuming, apparently.
Well, if you're dealing with Marcy, who doesn't know what the fuck eggs are.
And is apparently the only person other than Lucy who is doing egg, who's on egg detail for the town. But Linus is trying to convince Sally to stand in the Easter patch with him and wait for the Easter Beagle.
I remember sitting out in a stupid pumpkin patch all night waiting for the great pumpkin to come.
The Easter Beagle will never let you down.
I know he won't, but how about you?
Oh!
Damn!
It's a pretty good burn. Good burn there. I also like the hat montage because it was like... It reminded me like, oh yeah, Snoopy is also Sally's dog. They live in the same house. I think of Snoopy as Charlie Brown's dog only, but it was like, oh, they're in a family also.
Well, to be fair, everybody lives in everybody's house because there are no locked doors.
There's no
and
locked
people
doors.
Just wander in like, hey, what are you doing? Like, I'm just minding my own business until you broke into my house, you weird large-headed child.
And there seems to be an etiquette to it where if a group of large-headed children walks into another large-headed child's house, the host large-headed child has to greet them individually by name. Hi, Marcy. Hi, Franklin. Hi, Lucy. Hi, Sally. Hi, Charlie Brown. Hi, Frida. Hi, Charlie Brown. Hi, Franklin.
Yes. That 50%, any episode is 50% introductions and 50% Snoopy being awful.
It's like the handshakes on the way into the State of the Union, basically, anytime someone walks into a house.
From that, she does end that scene with a sick burn, but she also did say something that I really liked as Linus was trying to sell her on the Easter Beagle. By the way, did either of you also feel like this episode felt less like its own holiday episode and more like what beats worked, you know, like, hey, remember when Linus made up a thing and nobody believed it, ah, fuck it, let's just have him do that again. Remember when she wanted presents? Let's do that again. But so they're retreading the Great Pumpkin thing, and he's trying to convert Sally to his weird alt-reality.
Well, I don't know. I really want to believe you because I like you and I really respect you. But I just don't know.
And it's like, oh, she's like giving him the compliment sandwich. Like, I'm going to say something nice first, but also you're a crazy asshole.
Yeah.
But in a good way, you're a good man. Yeah, she deports herself very well.
She basically said, I am giving you the benefit of the doubt.
But you spew crazy garbage.
Yeah.
But then at the end, she still does it anyway, except it doesn't even make, like...
I was swindled!
Yeah.
Get me my lawyer!
But it's like, at least there were legal grounds the last time, because she was like, I am a minor. You brought me out to some undisclosed location and I sat out all night in the freezing cold, caught my death, and now your family will pay. Van Pelt, sounds like you got a lot of money with that fancy two-part name. And then in this, I guess she just sat on her stoop for an undisclosed period of time and waited for something to happen. And when she didn't, she was just like, this is bullshit and I'm burning this town to the ground.
I think it's a waste of time to buy and color eggs because the Easter Beagle will do all that.
Did Linus ever say specifically to Sally, hey, don't make eggs, it's a waste of time, Easter Beagle? Because I feel like he said that to everybody else, but Sally was never like, I have a strong impulse to dye eggs for some reason.
No, I think she did. I think she just didn't care one way or the other. And I would also extend that to going back to the Patty and Marcy arc, they have far too much invested in dying eggs. Like in the third act, which is like, my wife made this comparison to another episode, but the third act is really like the end of Magnolia, or like or the end of the first act of Les Mis, where they're just like, here's your storyline, here's your storyline, here's your storyline. And it's all terribly tragic. And Peppermint Patty is sitting there like in the middle of a park, just like, I really wanted to show you what's eggs, Marcy, but now I'll never be able to show you what's eggs. And like,
I'm really sorry. Here it is Easter morning, and we don't have any colored eggs.
I'm the one who's sorry, sir. I guess I'm not much of a cook.
I've seen this happen on holidays before. You look forward to being real happy, and then something happens that spoils it all.
And then Lucy's like, I will have all eggs.
This is going to be the greatest Easter egg hunt ever, and I'm going to find them all.
That's the thing. The entire plot of this episode happens in the last 5 minutes.
Yes.
Where Lucy's like, I got this plan. I'm going to hide the eggs, and then they will all be mine.
Honestly, I think that's why I have such an emotional connection to the Easter Beagle music, because it sets up so many pins and then resolves all those pins so quickly.
Yes. And then Charlie Brown, who's done fuck all in this entire episode. It's like, so Marcy, Peppermint Patty, miserable. Lucy, planning her Machiavellian takeover
and
of eggs.
Charlie Brown just says the thing he always says where he's like, well, everybody's together today and I'm alone and I'm sad.
I know why they have holidays. They have holidays so people can get together and have fun. So why am I alone?
Because you're exhausting.
Charlie Brown.
You are a burden on society, Charlie Brown. Also, all of these kids are alone. Everybody's just standing in the hell of their own making. It's not like there's a giant Easter party. It's not like anything is happening. And Charlie Brown, and it's almost like in the last 2 minutes of this, they were like, oh, we're making a Peanuts special. I guess we should do things that happen in Peanuts specials.
But this is what I think it's really about at the end. I think
what's the true meaning of Easter, Hal Lublin?
Sally gets too close to unplugging herself from the matrix that is that neighborhood. She doesn't call Linus her sweet babu. She starts to realize, like, oh, maybe he's not infallible. This dumb kid who thinks that
this dumb kid
is a giant pumpkin man and that a dog is responsible for Easter. But then at the end, like, Snoopy realizes that she's getting too close. He's like Agent Smith. So he gives her that Superman 2 kiss that takes her out of it completely. And then she's back to square one. This is her Groundhog Day. We don't know what happens at the other holidays. Every single fucking day, he's the Easter Beagle, Charlie Brown.
He's Rover from The Prisoner, basically. Yeah. He's kind of. Oh. Yeah.
Good boy, Rover. And then, yes, and then Snoopy, who has stolen all of Lucy's eggs, which, by the way, grinds Lucy's gears so hard that the epilogue of this episode is Lucy just sitting in the middle of her room. She doesn't even seem that mad, first of all.
I don't know, closer.
Oh, closer?
I can hear myself in the room, and I can't hear you in the room.
This is a blessing for you, I feel like, Molly.
That's the opposite of my problem.
Lucy has this Machiavellian plan to put all the eggs around town, write down their locations, and then just the next day we'll just be like, I'm the queen of eggs or whatever. Snoopy steals all of them, hands them out, and everybody's like, hey, we got eggs. And she's like, well, it gave me my own egg. And then we cut to the epilogue. Lucy is sitting in the middle of her room, seething, kicking furniture, angry, like table flipping, pissed. Linus walks in and says,
still moping? I can't believe it. But that was almost 10 weeks ago.
I can't help it. I'll never get over it. Never.
He actually uses that language. He says it's 10 weeks later. And I love the idea that maybe this episode was originally like Angels in America or Nicholas Nick, like it took place in like real time, and it was just then they cut out 10 weeks of Lucy just getting angrier and angrier, like pictures on a wall connected by yarn of all the different ways.
I think there's like a He's Your Dog style, like there's like a training montage in there somewhere, surely, of her like toughening up so she can clobber Snoopy.
Or maybe it's like Boyhood where they just keep coming back to her every 10 years. To see how she's doing. Nope, still mad. Nope. More yarn, more pictures. And it's just a bunch of, it's like Snoopy, the World War I flying ace, Joe Cool, all connected. Everything's going back to Snoopy. A pumpkin with a question mark. And a basket of Easter eggs.
Does she think that Joe Cool and Snoopy, like all of Snoopy's alters, are different?
There's a picture of Spike in there just for flavor.
Yeah, just for flavor. Like he's like the one. Nobody listens to me, man. I'm telling you.
I just live in the desert. I get mad crusty and I make jewelry.
Snoopy's a bad dog. He did this to me. Do you know I went to Harvard?
I used to be something, man.
Yeah. At the very least, the kids seem to respect the illusions he creates because he's got the best. If we're looking at the good side, if we're assuming this is all just good fun, Snoopy has the best imagination of anybody. Mm-hmm. He represents our imagination run wild, and the kids all respect it. Like, they're like, yeah, it's not like that dumb, Lucy's the only one who's like, that stupid dog is pretending his house is a plane. All the other kids think it's a real pilot in World War I. Or they at least are humoring it. Maybe he's the kid, looking at a snow globe.
The same elsewhere scenario.
Yeah, we don't know.
I think this is as good a time as any, unless there's anything specific in the plot we still haven't covered.
I would like to get on the record that the punchline to the great egg conundrum is that Peppermint Patty and Marcy get their hard-boiled egg, and she's like, all right, here's what you do. You put salt on it, and then you eat it. Marcy pulls the salt shaker that she always carries with her.
A full size, like restaurant quality salt shaker.
Maybe she's a little light fingered. She's like to take things. She puts salt on the egg without taking the shell off, takes a bite and says,
it tastes terrible, sir.
And it reminded me, first of all, that Marcy obviously was dropped here from an alternate dimension.
It was like a K-Pax kind of thing.
Yeah, she really is. But also, I will say that the entire holiday of Easter is built around getting children excited about the least delicious, least fun child food ever, which is just like, we're going to hunt, we're going to look for a thing, and now here's your prize. It's a boiled egg. They're gross.
Was this before we had hollow plastic egg technology?
That was right after they invented escalators. They were able to, they saved all of the time walking upstairs to concentrate on making hollowed out eggs.
But yeah. if they had hollowed like plastic eggs at this point, Marcy still would have probably tried to eat one. Oh. Just shell on.
She's so dumb.
I never knew
she was that dumb.
She's usually not that dumb.
She seemed real capable.
You kind of can't hold anything against any character from episode to episode.
That's true, but she's super dumb.
She's so dumb.
And now anytime
How dumb is she?
She's so dumb.
She doesn't know what's eggs.
Yeah. She doesn't know what's eggs, and she carries salt around. nothing's okay. Nothing is okay about her. She can't see out of her own glasses. How has she ever eaten? Because they don't have, we've established they don't have parents. They're just meat lumps. Who is feeding her? Why is she, has she been dead all along? And she's a ghost that only Patty can see? And it's some like sixth sense where Patty just refuses to help her finish whatever business she has left on Earth, which obviously is learning how to cook a fucking egg. And Patty's like, oh, you're here to help me. No, I'm a ghost. It's the other way around. You have to help me so I can get out of here.
I think this is as good a time as any to transition into a segment we like to call Lump Watch 2017.
Lump line.
So to catch Hal and our Joko Cruz audience up, Josh and I have been sort of holding on to, I don't want to say a theory. We won't like get on a podium and defend this theory.
I will just walk around town and yell at people about it, though.
You fools, you're wasting your time. Don't you know the meat lumps? there's a sort of recurring thing in Charlie Brown animated specials is a problematic lack of authority figures. And the theory that we came up with to explain that away was that there was some kind of industrial or sort of wartime type accident in this town that turned all the adults into gelatinous lumps of meat with a web mouth. So they talk like, wah, 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 wah. And that Lucy Van Pelt runs a compound out of the fanciest house in town and controls all the media.
And all the children have giant heads and they never get any older.
Do they look like Shmoo from Herculoids?
It's a little Shmoo. It's a little gelatinous cube. Okay. It's a little meat wad from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Okay. And the point of this theory is just, we're not going to go edit the wiki and say that this is true. But the point is, there are very few specials that do anything to contradict this theory. And so I would say there are enough unanswered questions in this, clearly, that I would say lump theory holds up in this, wouldn't you say?
5 out of 5 lumps.
The pure full-on lump. You can't dispute it. This might actually be the one that seals it and proves the theory once and for all.
We can go edit the wiki once we have data again.
Yes. Or if we want to just spend $400. That's how much this means to me, that I'm going to spend $400 on this boat to get internet for 5 minutes so I can be like, it's lumps, it's all lumps. It's lumps all the way down.
Lumps.
The only time there's any proof of another human being or anything is that Snoopy pays somebody.
A tall person over a tall structure, clearly designed for taller things than the average peanut size.
Yes.
Which indicates there might be taller life forms.
Or three kids sitting on each other's shoulders in a trench coat.
Or just Linus doing some asshole blanket gymnastics, so he's got, he turns his blanket into some stilts or something.
They're doing, now that's going to be in the next Olympics, right? The asshole blanket gymnastics.
That's where the escalators go, is up to the top of that counter so that they can take money.
Parachute down with your blanket.
Yeah.
I forgot one line that I wanted to get on the record.
Please,
one of my favorite things that Lucy's ever said. Linus comes rambling along like, ants in my brain. Eagles, beagle's coming.
It's really a waste of time. The Easter beagle does that.
Beagle's coming for us all. And Lucy responds,
leave me alone. Don't bother me with your stupid ideas.
Leave me alone. Don't bother me with your stupid ideas. And I want that on a t-shirt for the rest of my life and possibly as a tattoo on my body.
They gave out, yes, do friendship at me, no, don't friendship at me buttons on this cruise. And I would really like a don't bother me with your stupid ideas button. That would help me out a lot.
But on the yes button?
yes, but parenthetical.
Yes.
Yes, don't bother me with your stupid ideas.
There's an asterisk.
Hell, any last thoughts?
I have no further thoughts. I feel like I've excised some demons here today. I appreciate you having me on.
Never trust a man with a blanket. Get me my lawyer. I've been humiliated.
All right, I'll plug real quick.
Yes, please.
All right, ready? Okay. I have three podcasts right now. One is Surprisingly Nice with Travis McElroy. One is Tights and Fights, which is a pro wrestling podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. And then my main jam is We Got This with Mark and Hal with my partner Mark Gagliardi. And we'll be here on Friday recording live with all of our Nightville pals. So
look for that in your podcast feed, home listeners.
Yeah. And I'm at Hal Lublin on Twitter. That's useless in here.
But not in the real world. This will actually escape to the real world.
I know it will. I know. That's why I'm holding I'm talking to you at home. The people on this boat,
they don't even know. They don't have Wi-Fi.
This is some sort of high, like Supermax prison where no internet is allowed and none of us have been told.
So we end each episode with sort of quickly to sort of grade the episode overall. Is this a good entry point to the Peanuts universe?
I think that like George Lucas wants to do with the Star Wars holiday special, every copy of this should be rounded up and burned.
Just give them all to me. I'll take them.
Yeah. You can have every copy of it. Yay. Yeah. I don't think it's a good
entry
point.
I'll have it playing on every screen in my house.
Yeah.
How was the graphic blandishment on a scale of...
Of one to bland?
One to blandishment.
Bland to death. Yeah. It was beautiful. I really like the story. In the 70s, they really begin to attack consumerism, which is funny as fuck, because as they were doing that, they were assuredly printing Snoopy on any horizontal surface. Mm-hmm. Anything that had depth or mass, they were putting Snoopy on it and selling it for $5.
We should figure out where Camp Snoopy at Knott's Berry Farm began. And sort of line that up with as we go through the timeline.
Even that now, with Hal's theory, now that sounds like a weird death cult.
Camp Snoopy?
We all get the black Nikes and we drink the punch at Camp Snoopy.
Has anyone seen Roy? Oh, he went to Camp Snoopy. Oh.
Roy!
Oh no, seven.
Beagle's Gate.
do any characters learn anything?
No.
No. Sally has it taken away. She learns and then...
And then the
removed.
Kiss of death, yeah.
Yeah. She just angry after that, but couldn't remember why, and that's why she had the...
Well, it was Lucy that we're talking about.
Oh, Lucy was mad.
Lucy
she's
wants to go
mad.
Punch... she's always...
She's got a real hair up her ass.
Well, she's in charge of everything.
Just in general, yeah.
She's kind of the weird god leader of this compound of abandoned man children.
She refuses to cede any control of any kind. It's terrible at delegating.
It's like Scientology, but she only takes 5 cents from people.
The Scientologist is in.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like an auditing booth. Oh, no.
Hold these cans, Charlie Brown. I'm Josh Kagan.
I'm Molly Lewis.
This has been Peanuts Gallery. Thank you very much, everybody, and thank you, Hal Lublin.
Yay! Yay! Now let's go drink. Hi, blockheads. It's Molly. Congratulations on getting to the final episode of season 2 of Peanuts Gallery. We did it! Yay! We will return to our regularly scheduled podcast in the spring with the second half of the 1970s. In the fall, we will be releasing a homecoming special where we will focus on the cinematic feature Snoopy Come Home, which, full disclosure, I have never seen. But it has left a strong impression on every friend of mine who has found out I have a Peanuts podcast. Because they all say, oh, when do you get to Snoopy Come Home? So I'm a little nervous, you guys. But let's go on a journey of discovery together. And after that, we will reprise our annual tradition. I guess you could call it, how many times do you have to do something before it's a tradition? I would say 3 times. Our third annual revisit of A Charlie Brown Christmas. I want to say a couple quick thank yous. Thank you to our friend Ken Plume over at a site called Fred, who has blandished the heck out of this season. Beautifully blandished. Ken even went back and retroactively blandished season 1 so that it all sounds even and good. Audio mixing is one of those jobs that you don't notice when it's done well, but if you've been able to listen to Peanuts Gallery in headphones on a bus, that is all Ken. So I want to give him a big thank you, and an even bigger hug, and an even bigger glass of pineapple whip. Thanks, Ken. Want to thank Joko Cruz for hosting us and letting us record our podcast on the high seas. Thank you to Josh Meredith, who made sure our microphones were working. And thank you to Ben Swallow, who made sure that it was all recorded so that we could show you. I want to thank the whole fam over at Waffle Media for their hustle, loyalty, and respect. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for not only listening to us gush about the Peanuts, but listening to me ramble on and on through these announcements. Josh and I are learning about this as we go, and it's been really delightful to get to know you and to bounce outlandish Peanuts theories off of each other. If you like the show, we'd really appreciate if you left us a review on iTunes, or tell a friend, because you're pretty cool, and your friends are probably pretty cool, and we want lots of cool people listening to our podcast. The gap is a great time to introduce your friends to a podcast because there's time to catch up. Just saying. When we recorded this episode on the Joko Cruise, we gave out chocolate eggs and coloring pages. We don't know how to transmit chocolate through the internet yet, but in the meantime, those coloring pages are available as a downloadable PDF over at waffle.media/peanuts. If you color one in, we would love to see it. Please tweet it at us at Peanuts Podcast, and generally stay in touch. We think you're pretty cool. Here is your discussion question.
Aren't those shoes almost out of date, Sally?